saving money on exterior wall lights. Now at Menards. Find your style with Patriot Lighting. Exterior lights enhance the look of your home. Choose from over 50 options from Patriot Lighting. Now through May 19th, get $10 instant savings on a single qualifying purchase of $100 or more on in-stock outdoor wall lights. Check out our entire selection of outdoor lights and see the rest of our deals happening now on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And welcome, everybody, to Pulse of Fins Nation. I am your host, Louis Sung. I am joined by Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. I am joined by Alfredo Arteaga of the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast. So we had to delay the show one day. I didn't want to compete with our fellow Five Reasons Sports affiliates, Inside Leverage. Also, I had to be up at 4:30 this morning, which was going to be very difficult if I had done a show the night before. So it's a twofold thing, a win-win for me. We will make sure that we're going to do our regularly scheduled Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. from here on out. But with that said, we got plenty to talk about. The Miami Dolphins 2024 draft class is here, and that includes undrafted free agents. We're going to get into as much as we possibly can, give our thoughts, our grades on what the Miami Dolphins either did or did not accomplish during the draft. And there's just plenty that we want to get right into it. So without further ado, let's go ahead and just briefly mention our sponsors. We got PrizePicks.com. They are the revolutionary fantasy platform where you can pick up to, I believe it's now, if you're in the state of Florida, I believe the maximum is about 4 that you can do right now with their arena mode. But either way, you can still use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, and they will match up to $100 on your deposit when you sign up. So you obviously, no matter where you are, whether you're in South Florida or whether you are somewhere else in the country, you have plenty of incentive to join Prize Picks and use your fantasy knowledge to be able to get you some extra cash prizes. And of course, we also have Jersey 305. We're going to get into the video right now. So just enjoy.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for the 5 Reasons Sports Network. We've got a great new sponsor that fits with us perfectly. It's called jerseys305.com. That's jerseys305.com. This is your home for dead stock and vintage jerseys from the Heat, Panthers, Dolphins, Marlins, and the other local teams. Their mission was born from a passion for wearing jerseys of the old styles and the past players. Jerseys 305 aims to make every fan stand out from the crowd with unique pieces that you don't commonly see anymore. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but not today. And Jerseys 305 was created by the fans, for the fans. They're diehards just like you. In fact, they're probably listening to this episode right now. So check them out. Jerseys 305, their partnership with 5 Reasons Sports, celebrating with a 10% discount on the next purchase using the code 5 at checkout. Unlock your exclusive savings on the entire vintage collection.
So again, that's 5, and you can get 10% off your purchase when you go to jerseys305.com. So I personally, my father, he who had a Dan Marino jersey from way back when. I think he also had a Larry Zonka one hiding somewhere in his archives. If he's listening to this, I'll probably have to, hopefully he'll chime in the comments and he'll be able to confirm that. But in any case, Jersey 305, plenty of great stuff for you to check out. A lot of Heat jerseys was in that video, and I know the Miami Heat are currently fighting for their playoff lives right now, although I don't think anybody's I feel like just winning one game against the Celtics this year around was already overachieving for them right now. So in any case, we're not here to talk about that. We're not here to talk basketball. We're here to talk football. So let's get right into this. 2024 draft. The Miami Dolphins did not do a trade down like I was really hoping they would. I've been saying for the longest time that if the Miami Dolphins were really going to do something that would make a serious impact, they would trade down. Chris Greer even said that they had plenty of offers to trade down. They ultimately decided not to. And I'll go ahead and I'm just going to read off very briefly what exactly their draft class was, just to recap everything. The very first pick the Miami Dolphins made on the day one of the draft was for Chop Robinson, an edge rusher out of Penn State. He has incredible upside, I have to admit. Great measurables, awesome, awesome raw talent. Not exactly what I would have done, just because, again, I want players who I know for a fact can be starters right now, and I don't know if that if Chop Robinson is going to be able to do that for them. Let me put it this way. I don't know if he can do that for them if everybody else was healthy. He's going to start this year just because Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb are sort of up in the air about how available they actually will be. So I put an asterisk on him being a starter this year. Then second round, Patrick Paul, an offensive tackle out of Houston. Offensive line, great, but another raw talent that needs to be rebuilt from the ground up. Jalen Wright, the Miami Dolphins drafted, traded up to be able to get him. I know, Alf, you think he's probably the best running back in this draft class, running back out of Tennessee. Right after that was Mo Kamara. That was one I had actually been pounding the table for a long time, another edge rusher. But when Alf told me about him, I had to look into it for myself, and I fell in love with the guy. Round six, Malik Washington, wide receiver, and then Patrick McMorris in that same round. He's a safety out of California. And finally, round seven, Taj Washington, who was one of Caleb Williams' wide receivers. So let's see if maybe it wasn't all Caleb and there was actually something to Mr. Taj Washington. But that's the draft class, and that's not even going into the incredible amount of undrafted free agents the Miami Dolphins have signed on, and we'll try to get into them as we go. But first, I want to hear from you guys. The overall thoughts on the draft class, what would you grade Chris Greer on his job for the draft? And if there are any specific people, if you can either go with the draft class as a whole, or you can just go player by player. It's up to you. But Duke, I'm going to go ahead and let you go first. I know you've been holding back the speech because you told me about it ever since last week.
Since you messaged, said I had a rant. And then it ended up being like that scene in Dumb and Dumber, where the first 2 days and then the third day happened, and it was like, just when I thought you couldn't be any dumber, you go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself. I thought Chris Greer got good value on day three of the draft, got some players at spots I didn't think they would be available. So the trade up, he used the third from next year, considering that Miami's going to have a compensatory third, possibly two compensatory thirds. Used one, his organic third-round pick, got it to in the fourth round to get Jalen Wright. So I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily upset with the first two picks. I can see the vision for them and what they can do. I wanted more guys that would have an impact day one, but I see ways to get them on the field. And day three, I thought he did a good job. So I'm okay with the draft now. I haven't really looked into the undrafted free agents. There's a couple of offensive linemen in there that look like they may have a chance. And I know they spent – one of the things that I've found out over the years is if they spend a lot on a undrafted free agent, that means they have a vision for him. So they did that a couple years ago. There was a tackle, I think, from Arizona State. He ultimately didn't make it, but they did the same thing for Kader Kohu, and they paid him a big signing bonus as an undrafted free agent, and he's still here. So they, I think, Duck obviously has they gave him some money. They wanted him to be here, so I think they've got something possibly in mind for him.
All right, and Alf, I want to hear your thoughts on everything. I'm sure that you were just on OnlyFans, and I believe you were doing a Q&A, by the way, if you guys want to join in on that. It's only $3 a month, and you can get in on that using the link below, or if you just need it read out to you, I actually do have it now. It's discord.gg/OnlyFans, right?
Yep, discord.gg/OnlyFans.
All right, so there you go. Does anybody ever really use a backslash, though? That's what I want to know. Like, I can't even, like, half the time, I can't even find the backslash on my keyboard. So, in any case, so let's hear what you had to say about this, Alf, because I know that CK and you and Simon, you've been going on about this. I'm sure you've done your show as well. But, and I know that universally, you all three of you absolutely trashed the Patrick Paul pick, and I was honestly right there with you guys. And like, why are we picking a guy who has to be rebuilt from the ground up a la Austin Jackson? So, but go ahead. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, he's a blank canvas. Like, you know, that's he's going to be a redshirt project for this year. Hopefully he takes to it, you know. Hopefully he trains up to the season pretty well and he actually contributes. The first pick, Chop Robinson, I like the player. But I don't like taking in the first round whoever. And remember, my board, and I keep repeating this to people, I'm not as arrogant as some people on Twitter seem to be, where they think that they know everything. My board does not matter. But on my board, he was the fourth best edge player. I don't like taking the fourth best of anything in the first round. Okay? But many like him. Day three was an absolute tour de force. That was a performance by Chris Greer. First of all, he outperformed me. I was on our podcast on 3 yards per carry when we did our draft preview, and I was saying, trade a third round pick from 2025 to get into the fourth round and target Mo Kamara with that pick. They didn't even need to do that. They got Mo Kamara anyway, and they did that to get, in my opinion, and the guy who I ranked, the best running back in the draft. And for those who say, oh, but you have 1,000 running backs, why do you need another running back? Last year, they finished the season for a team that likes to play two running backs at the same time, okay? How many times did you see Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane together, okay? For a team that likes to play two running backs at the same time, last year, they finished the season with one running back. They played the two biggest games of the year, Baltimore and Buffalo, with one running back, Devon Achane. That was it. They had nobody else. That's not going to happen this year. Okay? Now you have real depth up and down the roster. Malik Washington is an absolute banger of a pick. He's going to contribute right away. I think he puts Braxton Berrios in danger, to be honest with you. So I absolutely love day three. Day three was so good. Just put it this way. Let's say they would have, you know, just switched the picks. Had they taken Jalen Wright in the second round and taken Patrick Paul in the fourth round, would we like it a little bit better? Probably.
Well, you know, I mean, I still would have been questioning, like, I know you still like the player, but I still would have been questioning why in the second round when they have so many needs, why would they take a running back?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It would have been just one of those, you know, BPA things. You know what I mean? Like, I would have said, look, he's
the BPA, though?
Maybe. I have to look back at that. Look, in the second round, I look back on it. The only guys that I would have cared about taking was Cole Bishop, who the Bills got, and Kingsley Sumotara, who I forgot who took him. But that was Chiefs. The offensive lineman I liked. The Chiefs took him?
Yeah, of course they did.
Okay. So, yeah, Chiefs of Buffalo took the two guys I liked. So that's pretty much it. You know, I thought it was getting thin in that second round. You know, I thought that they would trade down in the second round, actually.
Yeah, that's the thing that really gets me. Chris, like, every year we do the same thing. We project that, oh, yeah, the Dolphins are definitely going to trade down in this draft. There's going to be so much talent went right around when they would pick with whoever they partner with. But I can't even remember. When was the last time Miami actually traded down?
That's a good question.
Because it feels like he's always trading up to get a guy. I can't remember the last time he traded down for anything.
2020, traded down from 26 to 30. That's the Noah Igbinoghene pick.
Ugh. Maybe he shouldn't trade down.
Yeah, that's one right there. Technically, they traded down and then traded back up when they traded their picks that they got from the 49ers to the Eagles, and then they went back up to get Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, but that was before the draft even happened. It wasn't day of.
Right. Yeah, they made all those trades like 3 weeks before the draft or something.
And I was at the gym. Anytime I'm at the gym, the Dolphins do something. That's just how it works in free agency.
I was at the gym when the Tyreek Hill trade was announced, and I was looking at the TV inside the Black Card Spa at Planet Fitness. I was like, "What, Tyreek Hill?"
Yeah. One of the things, and I heard this is from I heard a few weeks ago from CK, is that nobody trades down. You have somebody that trades up. So it depends on who wanted to come back up to that spot that Miami was at, and if anybody wanted to take that spot and the value there. So as much as we would like to have traded down and get some more assets, I wouldn't have traded down unless I could get something I really wanted. Maybe they could have got a fourth round pick for it. But if you look at the trades that happened, they were kind of all over the place in the first round. That's one thing we mentioned on the show Friday night was the cost of moving around in the first round seemed cheaper than the cost of the second round. I think Los Angeles moved up. Several teams moved up in the second round, and it cost them higher picks than what it costed, I think, Minnesota to go from 23 to 17. So I think only one pick that was swapped in on the first day had a third round pick involved. That was the Dallas-Detroit trade. So most of them were for late round picks, but in the second round, it was just very expensive. And I think teams were trying to, you know, they were, I guess, seeing a run that was going to happen. I think the run on receivers happened right there pretty quickly late in the first round. And that's another thing to give Chris Greer credit for is that he got ahead of the running back run. They traded up, got Jalen Wright, and in the next 14 picks, six of the running backs came off the board. So they went from having any running back they wanted to no running back available at that spot. So kudos to him for getting ahead of that particular run. He's fallen behind before. I think the Liam Eichenberg trade up situation was a situation where he was trying to get in on a tackle run he thought was going to happen. But yeah, he got the guy that he wanted and he beat everybody else with the punch. So I think there's what, two running backs that went ahead of Jalen Wright.
And those were the guys that were the two consensus best players, I think, like as far as running backs go.
Carolina took Brooks from Texas and the Rams took Blake Corum. And I don't know what round Corum went. I know Brooks was the second round. But I'm checking now. Corum went. But Wright was, it depends on what board you're looking at. He was the first, second, third best running back off the board.
Okay. So yeah, the Panthers took Jonathan Brooks out of Texas. Mm-hmm. And then the next running back, by the way, Brooks was the 46th overall pick. And then I'm going all the way down here to see what happens. You have to wait all the way until pick 66 of the Cardinals for Trey Benson.
Trey Benson. Okay. So,
then Blake Corum went 83 to the Rams. So there were actually, four. Marshawn Lloyd went to the Packers. So four running backs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, the way I have looked at it, I like to think of Wright as basically a bigger Raheem Mostert. He's 5'11", 210, ran a 4.38 or 4.39 at the combine. He said in his post-draft interview that he was clocked at 23.7 miles per hour on the GPS. And I think that caught the reporters kind of off guard. They were kind of like, what? yeah, they got some speed at the running back position. And he might be the slowest guy on the field, wildly enough. But again, he got ahead of the running back run that, you know, that there wasn't a lot of them going. And then 15, I think there were 7 and 15 picks was Wright being the first one. So, again, Chris Greer got the guy that he wanted. He did not wait and pick up, you know, the second, third, fourth, fifth guy that he was happy with. So give him credit for that. I wasn't as happy with that pick initially because I wanted some other players. And then Miami got those other players later on in the draft. So I was like, okay, so Chris Greer knows what he's doing and I don't. So.
I just find it endlessly amusing that what was the one I think it's by Tim Wright, like there's like this Buffalo Bills guy who was screaming to the heavens that they needed to get both Mo Kamara and Malik Washington, and Miami got both those guys. So
it was Nate Geary.
Nate Geary, that's him.
That guy. Yeah, I like Malik Washington, his what he brings to the table. He was the focal point of a bad Virginia team, still put up a ton of yards and catches. He's built like a running back, so while he doesn't have the speed that Waddle and Hill have, he's got a little more physicality to them, him, I would say. But I like that pick. And that's who I thought they were going to go for in round four, because I thought that's where he was going to go. And then they got him and Kamara. And I know we had talked about Kamara on the show. I know Alf had mentioned him several weeks ago. And I remember that's where I first heard about him. I was like, oh, I'll look into him. Yeah, I think they just, like Alf said, they cleaned up on day three. And what question marks they had on day one and day two, they made up for with day three.
And this has been, and the interesting thing that I guess, like, after day three, my grade improved overall for Chris Greer, like a lot of people, I feel like they did. Like, a lot of people were happy with the picks anyway. Patrick Paul is a very polarizing pick. He's probably the most polarizing pick Miami made, just because some people really like his raw traits and thinks he can be something special. It still kills me that literally in the press conference, Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel were justifying the decision by saying, look what he does. He's still awesome even when he screws up. Like, you don't want to acknowledge that he screws up all the time, man. That's not something that you're going to look for. But,
well, I think when you say that, it's with the – I take it as even when he's not perfect, he can still get the job done.
But no, that's obviously what they meant. But obviously what they meant. But it's just like, why would you even acknowledge that? Say something like along the lines of, this, he's a raw physical talent and we're looking forward to building him up into something that can be truly special, or something along those lines. Not like this, yeah, he messes up all the time, but we'll fix that. Like, that's not how you market that to your fan base, who are looking at this guy thinking, there was other guys that were more polished and ready to go. Why didn't you take one of those guys instead?
Well, and I have argued this point on the Finsider with several people, and I think it's like this. Chris Greer, since he's taken over in 2019 as the undisputed general manager, nobody over him, nobody else making decisions, he's drafted, I think, 9 offensive linemen and 39 chances. He's taken 5 in the first 3 rounds out of 18 possible choices. And people are like, he doesn't want to invest in the offensive line. Well, he does invest in the offensive line. He's gone out and got guys. Even in the Flores years, he went out and got guys. He got Eric Flowers, got Ted Karras. Went out and got Connor Williams, got Teron Armstead. Went out and got Aaron Brewer this year. So I don't think it's a situation where they don't value the offensive line. They don't value offensive guards. And that's who we were kind of, I know on the show Friday, we were talking about, well, there's Christian Haynes is still available.
Cooper Christian Beattie's Mahogany available. Lasted so long. I was so pissed that Miami didn't go for him.
And so, yeah, I mean, and so we were all like, we need these interior guys. And I think they value tackles and they value center and guard. It's like, yeah, we'll figure it out. So that's just my take on it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't think they put as much emphasis on a position of that position. So for them, Patrick Paul is going to have a higher grade simply because he's a tackle over a guy like Haynes or Beebe, who are interior only guys. And I don't know that they have center versatility, but
I mean, Christian Mahogany's medicals were evidently so bad that he went in the 6th round. And this is a guy that had 2nd round grades almost everywhere.
No, we all thought that. I was thinking to myself, what the heck is going on? Like, he must be like on the verge of death or something for it to be lasting this long.
The issue is that he had knee issues in 2022. It turns out that the leg that he had knee issues on is 1.5 inches shorter than his other leg, which means career is not going to be a long one.
So he kind of walks around lopsided.
Pretty much, he's basically on one leg, but like I've said, like I've told people before, he's the best one-legged guard I've ever seen.
Yeah. And one of the things that I like to do after the draft is I like to go back and watch the combine and watch the guys that Miami picked, because, you know, they have like, what, 200 guys show up and you're, I wonder which one Miami's going to pick. Well, now that I know, I go back and watch these guys. And one thing I'll say about Patrick Paul is for a dude that size, he moves very well. Now, if you go back and watch his 40, his form in the 40 is awful. His get off from that stance was not very good. I think if he had actually trained a little harder on the 40 time, he probably would have cut a tenth off of his time.
I have a question.
Yes.
Just from a pure scouting standpoint, why do we care how fast 300-pound dudes can run in a straight line?
You don't, but really you want that like that first 10 yards. The 10-yard split is kind of what's important. And to reiterate that point, if you watch him his first run, like at the 30-yard line, he's done. Like he's on fumes at that point. Not saying he's winded. I'm just saying he was done with that run at the 30-yard line. And he kind of gets it across. But if you watch him in the other movement skills, like they do that mirror drill where they have the guy with the football and he's going, hey, and all that crap. And he moved better than some of the other guys. I can't remember who it was that I remember watching, but that dude, he struggled. Like his movement was bad. It looked like me out there. Okay. Just, it looked like this dude just wasn't getting, and him, he's 6'8", 330 pounds. And
are we referring to Patrick Paul or?
No, I don't know who the other guy was. He was another player.
6'8", was Amarius Mims?
No. The other guy was, he was a guard prospect. He was struggling. Patrick Paul was not. He was moving very well in that drill. He looked like a basketball player out there doing the slides. And I thought, well, this guy's got movement skills, and he's got the unteachable things of the length and the height and the size. And he put up 30 reps with 36-inch arms. So anybody who's ever bench pressed can tell you the longer your arms, the harder it is to bench press. And he put up 30 reps. And I looked at his testing and size numbers compared to Teron Armstead, Austin Jackson, and then I went with Trent Williams, who is probably considered the best offensive tackle in the game right now. And athletically, he's a little bit – he didn't run the 40 times quickly. He had a stronger bench press. He had similar – he had a lower vertical jump, but a similar broad jump. His agility testing, I think he didn't run the three – he ran the three count, but not the 20 short shuttle, I think. But either way – he tested as good as those guys. So there's stuff to work with. It's just the on-ramp to get him on the field. And I have a theory that I can go into when you want to hear it.
I mean, you can go ahead and give it, but my point is still going to remain that I understand that we're in this, we trust Butch Berry, we trust Mike McDaniel, we trust Frank Smith, all these offensive line gurus who have set things up to make it as easy as humanly possible for their offensive linemen to thrive. And we're looking at Austin Jackson as proof positive that these guys know what they're doing, and okay, good for them. But I made the same point. Number one, they had to rebuild Austin Jackson from the ground up. And even after that, even after we're saying that Austin Jackson is so greatly improved, it's not like he was a Pro Bowl player. He was competent. And well, to say that a guy is competent is not exactly a thrilling endorsement for the guy. Well, that's just an upgrade from what Austin Jackson was.
Well, I'll look at it from another perspective as well. The first couple of years he was here was with Brian Flores. And say what you will about Brian Flores, he could not put together a good offensive staff.
No, he couldn't. Absolutely not.
And the offensive line coaching was rough. And then McDaniel gets here, and he gets Applebaum from BC. And Austin Jackson misses the entire year. And then Butch Berry comes in. So in 1 year with Butch Berry, a guy that most of us considered a massive liability became a competent player. Who's to say he can't move into better than that his second year with Butch Berry?
Okay.
My theory is, I believe Chris Greer said, or Mike McDaniel, one of them said after the draft, that Paul can play left or right side. And I got to thinking about that. It's like, why would you say that? You did not draft him. You wouldn't say that about Teron Armstead. Why would you, you draft this guy to be your left tackle? Why would you say to play the right side? And then my wheels started spinning. And then I said, there's a guy they brought back this year who was on the verge of retirement and decided to come back. And that's Kendall Lamb. We all penciled him in. Oh, he's the backup tackle, as he should be. However, he took a pay increase to come back. I think it was almost twice what he got last season.
Which still isn't a lot, but...
No, not a lot, but he got twice as much. Would you want to come back and go through all the work that you have to do, all dealing with the weather and the heat and all of that stuff, to be a guy that's going to ride pine and sit the bench? So my theory is, what if they told him, said, look, if you want to come back, I understand you're contemplating retirement, but if you want to come back, we're going to put you in a position where you can compete for a starting spot on the inside. I know they talked about cross-training him last year, and if I'm wrong on this, y'all can correct me, but I think that he's going to get in there and possibly compete for a starting guard spot, and Patrick Paul becomes your OT3, even if he's raw. Because they did say they do see how he can contribute this year. But if he's OT4, he's probably not going to contribute much this year. OT3, he would. And so that's just a thought. It wouldn't surprise me if it happens. It wouldn't surprise me if it didn't happen. But, I mean, the guy's coming back for one final year. And yeah, he's getting a paycheck, and that's great. But you don't want to just sit there and just collect a check when this might be your last chance to ever play the sport. So I think he's going to get in there. Lamb's going to get in there and compete for a starting guard spot and see where it goes. That's my thought. So if you do that, Paul gets on the field as your OT3. And if he's a colossal failure, you've still got pieces to move around, such as Lamb and Keon Smith, who I think Keon Smith still makes the team. But I see that as the on-ramp to get Paul on the field in 2024.
Let me say that I don't think that's going to happen. And I'll tell you why. Kendall Lamb doesn't want to play guard.
And okay. I didn't think so.
And he told us personally, like right out of his mouth. He said, okay. I don't play guard. I haven't played guard in a very long time, and I don't want to play guard. So I don't think it's something that he wants to do. I think he's here to be Teron Armstead's valet for the season. And I think Patrick Paul is on that red shirt year. I think he's training up for a year to be ready for next year as the starting left tackle.
But again, that's where the frustration comes in specifically for me, is that the Chris Greer mindset of draft for a year from now instead of right now just drives me up a wall. Like you're trying to compete for a Super Bowl. You have a window that's eventually it closes for every team. And I get Chris Greer's trying to keep it open for as long as humanly possible. But at some point, it's got to give. You're going to have to pay Tua. That money's going to start piling in. And I know the salary cap goes up every year, but that quarterback money does hurt after a little while. You still have to, you can't just easily.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Move off of Tyreek Hill anymore, because you let Tyreek Hill 2.0 go to Kansas City. What the heck are you doing? So that's neither here nor there. Eventually, you're going to have to move off those big contracts. Now, let's just say, and I don't think that this is what they should do or what they're going to do, just for the sake of argument, I'm going to throw some numbers at you. If Miami decides that they are satisfied with what they see from Chop Robinson and what will admittedly likely be very limited reps, he'll probably play the first few weeks as a starting role, and then eventually as Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb get back to full strength, they're going to take over most of those snaps, and Chop will be used as a role player. Maybe he'll be moved around a lot. I know that CK and you are posting some just some video clips kind of showing what it is that he's doing in OnlyFans and what he's capable of. But ultimately, it feels like what Chris Greer is doing is he's trying to set the stage for Miami to move off of Bradley Chubb immediately, which is weird since they just restructured his contract. But if you look at what it shows on Over the Cap, if you designate Bradley Chubb as a post-June 1st cut, a la Xavien Howard, Miami accumulates about
next season.
Million,
next
yeah,
season.
In 2025. Yeah, 2025. Yeah. In 2025, if you cut Bradley Chubb, you get about $9 million in dead cap, but you save almost $20 million in actual cap space. So by doing that, you save a lot of money, and you already drafted two replacements in both Chop Robinson and Mo Kamara. So that's what it feels like they're trying to do. They're trying to set the stage for Miami to move off of them quickly. And I mean, if that's the case, okay. Like, you can do the same thing with Teron Armstead. You could cut him, because I think teams get two post-June 1st cuts, right? Miami only used one this year. But next year, you could use both. And you could, it's very likely Teron Armstead retires, but hopefully they're able to cut. Are you able to designate a retiring player as a post-June 1st?
Well, no, I think if he retires, that accelerates, you know, whatever money is owed. And I think the year accrues. I'm not sure. But I think that's how it works. If he retires, it's essentially like cutting him.
Right, but it depends on when he retires. Like, if he decides he wants to retire before...
No, you move the money yourself. He can retire whenever he wants to retire. But you could designate when you want to be free of his contract.
Okay, and so basically Armstead could still technically be post-June 1st freedom, which means that Miami wouldn't be on the hook on their salary cap for the extensive amount of money, because there's a big difference next year. If you cut him before June 1st, you get over almost $20 million in dead cap, and you only save about 3.5. Post-June 1st, about $7.8 million in dead cap and about $14.3 million in savings. That's a big difference there. So you can dump over $35 million with just Chubb and Armstead alone next season. And not that I think they will do this, but if they decide not to use Armstead or Chubb, Jalen Ramsey would save them about $19.5 million and only accrue about $6.7 million. I'm sure that they're hoping that Cam Smith balls out. Because this is what it feels like. Again, this is what feels like Chris Greer is doing. He made all these moves to get all these superstars to try to win the Super Bowl now, and yet it already feels like he's trying to find the replacements so that he can move off of them as quickly as humanly possible.
So, well, no, not moving off of them as quickly as humanly possible, because that would be this season. He's just setting it up for 2025 and beyond.
This,
like
season,
any good GM would, you know?
As quickly as possible, that still makes some financial sense.
Right, but there is still a world where Bradley Chubb has a monster year and they just roll him over for another season. Like, that's a possibility. Like, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, this is Tyreek Hill's last season. Well, no. What's kind of obvious is that his last season is going to be for sure 2025. Like, that's a fact. Like, if you just look at his contract, he's not playing on that 2026 number. Like, he's getting cut because Miami gets a pretty giant savings by cutting him before that 2026 season.
Oh yeah, $45 million in savings. That's huge.
Yeah. So they're setting up the team going forward. They're using the Philadelphia Eagles accounting, where they just roll over their finances every 2 years. They create these little 2-year windows to keep the team competitive throughout. You know, there's no hard resets here.
And the other thing that we have to look at is the two players he took were premium positions. And I know a lot of us, you know, I know we had talked about Worthy and the receiver position. But I know a lot of people are like, we need to, you know, every mock draft out there. So you need to replace Christian Wilkins and you need to replace Robert Hunt. And I think defensive tackle is moving into that kind of premier position, but I don't think guard is. And so while a lot of fans want the, we need somebody that can play right now to help us right now. Let's say they do that. Let's say they go out and get Graham Barton, who would have been a great pick at 21. He would have started immediately on the interior. And Miami wins the Super Bowl and they got pick 32.
I would have been so happy.
Do you think they find a left tackle at 32? Now you can say, well, maybe they get in a guy like Patrick Paul.
The Chiefs don't seem to have trouble finding first round picks.
Well, no, but they didn't. They didn't have a first round pick tackle. They had Juwan Taylor, who was a free agent signing, and then they signed Donovan Smith last year after the draft because he was still available. And before that, they had Orlando Brown, who they traded a first round pick to get. So they didn't use an organic first-round pick on a tackle because you're probably not going to find a guy that's going to step in immediately at that spot. So would you rather have Patrick Paul on the roster now, have him learn for a year and be ready to step in 2025, or would you rather have a desperate-needed offensive tackle in 2025 and then have to go out and hunt for a free agent that's going to be very expensive, or try to find your guy who more than likely is going to be the fifth or sixth best guy at a late round pick? Cause we're assuming the Dolphins are going to be picking in the 20s at worst. You know, we're not expecting them to be a non-playoff team. So I get the move, whether you like the player or not, it's a different story. And I know that they said they were trying to get back up into the first round. I don't know if that was for Patrick Paul or possibly Tyler Guyton. I know that's a guy they brought in on a visit.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Alf. Tyler Guyton was also on your please don't pick list.
No, I actually like Tyler Guyton a lot.
Simon didn't like him.
I think he was okay with him. He was just he wasn't just too hot.
One of y'all didn't like him.
Yeah, he wasn't too hot on him, I think. Yeah. Well, I could check his draft guide, but I think he didn't mind him, but he wasn't a huge fan of his. But I didn't mind him either. But they're trying to trade up in the first round without using 21, which means obviously they were going to offer their first round pick from 2025 and more things, probably offering their first round pick from 2025 and 55. To get another pick in the first round, probably to take Troy Fatan. Okay. Which means they would have just stayed at 21 with their second first round pick and taken Chop Robinson. Like that was obviously what they were going to do. But when they try to get back into the first round, like that's kind of obvious. It was either for Xavier Worthy or Tyler Guyton. Like that was going to happen.
Well, we all wish that would have happened at this point. So let's just go into now. We've talked about what the Miami Dolphins actually did in the draft. We talked a little bit about what we feel like they should have done in the draft. So now what I want to do, Alpha Duke, I know you said you didn't look into the UDFAs that much. Neither have I. I don't really know much about them. Alf, you and obviously you and the rest of your crew have been talking about some of these guys. I know we all talk about Storm Duck having the best name we've ever heard ever. But in all reality, are there any UDFAs that you're looking at that might actually be worth something here?
That's the one. That's just him. Storm Duck. Although the other guys are all interesting, especially the pass rusher from UCLA. His name always keeps escaping me.
Grayson Murphy.
Yeah, Grayson Murphy. He's a pretty nice player, and he will contribute on special teams for sure. The quarterback is Hardison. I believe is his name. Mm-hmm. Big arm. Like that's going to be interesting to watch in camp, because if he pops in camp, that's going to free up more money. Maybe you could dump Mike White and just bump up Skylar Thompson, or maybe Skylar Thompson is the one that goes. So, you know, those are the two guys, but there's a few other ones. There's one that they signed recently, who's a defensive tackle who is, you know, who's noticeable, and he has good combine numbers. I'm trying to get his his name and
Leonard something.
Yeah, Leonard Payne. Okay. Yeah, he's 6'2.5", 300 pounds, 6'10 wingspan, which is huge. 11-inch hands. Think about that. 11-inch hands. And he ran a 4.940 at 300 pounds. Okay.
That's
so,
freak.
Okay, Anthony Weaver definitely has a type, and we're beginning to see it on the defensive line. He likes them compact, and he likes them quick. So that one's going to be one to watch because they have so many defensive tackles as of right now.
Yeah, and length doesn't seem to be an issue for him as far as at least your edge rushers, because Chop, Kamara, and Murphy, none of them have like top tier arm length. So they like the explosiveness. So, and I've watched some reps of Mo Kamara, and that dude's a beast off the edge as far as his speed. And we know what Chop Robinson can do athletically. So I think you're right. He's got types. And it was interesting. I was trying to read some of the stuff about these guys, and one of the comps that I read for Chop Robinson was David Ojabo, who was a Baltimore draft pick. He was the Michigan edge rusher. He was the other rusher besides Aiden Hutchinson. And he tore his Achilles during his pro day. And so he went a little further down. But you look at the size, you look at the stature, the athleticism, and it's similar to Chop Robinson. And that's what Weaver wants. So, his signature was all over that pick.
Yeah. By the way, Salmon did like Tyler Guyton a lot because he had him as the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the 7th ranked tackle. So the only guys he had ahead of him were J.C. Latham, not in any order, but J.C. Latham and Marius Mims. All these guys went ahead of him, by the way. Talisa Fuaga, Troy Fatano, Olu Fashano, and Joe Alt. So
was it CK that didn't like him? I think somebody on your group didn't like him.
Yeah, so it was CK. But, Guyton, you know what's interesting is that Simon ranked the tackles in the exact order they got drafted, except for two guys, Amarius Mims and Latham. You got to flip-flop them.
So, and I know that according to Barry Jackson, Miami actually gave a nice chunk of cash to Mark Perry, a safety at a TCU. What do we know about him?
I don't know anything about him. He was not on my draft list. So, well, obviously he's a UDFA. So he was not on my draft list. So I got to check him out too. They're signing a pretty broad class, just like last year. And there's going to be guys that stick because they do every year. Like they've nailed the UDFA period every single year they've been here. You know, ever since Chris Greer took over 2019, the UDFA class, he hits it pretty hard, signs a very, very broad class. And that broad class usually bears some fruit.
What do you think of the offensive lineman Matthew Jones from Ohio State?
Okay, now that one's an interesting one. If you watch his tape against Penn State, first of all, he injured Chop Robinson, took him out of the game on a concussion. Okay, he pulled. It was one of those backside pulls for support. Chop Robinson was coming off the edge, and here comes Matthew Jones pulling and hits Chop Robinson, gives him a concussion. He's out for the game. He is, not only is he physical, but he's pretty alert in pass pro. You see him a couple of times try to work his way to the next level and hit the cutoff. And when you hear people say, can this guard hit the cutoff? It just means pursuit across the formation from the weak side. Let's say the weak side linebacker or a safety coming across the formation. Can your offensive lineman get to the second level to cut him off from making a play on the perimeter? All right. He's seen doing that. I've watched him now in two games. That guy can play. you know.
Which again, but this is what gets me. And again, I'm not a draft guru or anything along those lines. I'm much better when the season actually starts and I can comment on stuff then. But if he has so many interesting traits, what keeps him from getting drafted in the first place?
Because he's a guard that has no versatility whatsoever. He doesn't play tackle whatsoever. So he's all those interior guys, they're locked in, you know, to being late round picks. Go look back at the draft and then count how many interior offensive linemen were taken in the top three rounds. I think it was less than five.
Yep.
Okay. The NFL doesn't care about interior linemen. They don't want them.
Until it's time to pay them for Robert.
Yeah. Robert Hunt, which is weird, you know, but even then look who Robert Hunt is. Robert Hunt can play right tackle.
You know? And you got to realize, if you look at Greer's draft picks since 2019, he's drafted two guys that were interior offensive linemen only. That was Michael Dieter and Solomon Kinley. Everyone else that he's drafted on the offensive line were tackles, and two of them moved inside. Austin Jackson even played inside. But they were drafted as tackles. And remember, the team writes it down on the card when they turn it in. So this is not like somebody's got a draft ranking, like ESPN's draft ranking says this guy's a guard, so he's a guard. The team, so like a prime example of that was that, I don't know how you say his name, like Siavane Fataki or Vaki or whatever. He played safety and running back at Utah. They announced him as a running back. So that's where they see him. That's where they're going to use him at. They announced Robert Hunt as a tackle. They announced Liam Eichenberg as a tackle. They were viewed as tackles. And they moved him inside, but that's kind of what they do. So they've not really looked at – Chris Greer's not really looked at interior guys. Every guy he's drafted has been a tackle, except those two guys. So I'm interested to see if this Matthew Jones kid can actually win a starting spot or at least win a roster spot, because, I mean, I think he's competing with the likes of Robert Jones, you know, Liam Eichenberg, Jack Driscoll. And I think Eichenberg has a leg up because he can play center. But, why not this kid? So, I mean, it's not like that – it's not like you have guys set in stone there and the competition's fierce, you know.
So, with that in mind, and we'll close up with this. The draft is over. Undrafted free agents are over. Talia is not a Dolphin, which I am very sad. That would have been hysterical. But in all seriousness, the second wave of free agency starts now. The Xavien Howard money is going to come off the books. Miami actually has to sign their draft class. It's going to eat up about $10 million. Where does Miami go from here? They would probably have enough space to sign maybe one or two more guys. There's probably enough room to do that. I don't think the Odell Beckham Jr. thing is going to happen anymore. They drafted Malik Washington. They drafted Taj Washington. Eric Uzunkama still hanging around. I don't think the need for OBJ is that strong anymore. So I don't think that's
going to... I think it is. They added more. They added more slot receivers. They still have a need on the boundary. Yeah. So I think the Odell Beckham thing is very, very much alive still.
I agree. I was going to say, I think he's the guy they look for. Simply because, look, we're high on Malik Washington. We like his skill set and we like what he can bring. He's also a sixth-round rookie. And you don't want him being your go-to guy if Waddle or Hill get injured or miss time for whatever reason. So I think he's there. I think they get him. I don't know about offensive line. I know a lot of people were talking about, like, Dalton Risner and whoever else, that guy they brought in earlier, Phil Haynes. Maybe they sign a guy like that if they can get him cheap, but I think Odell Beckham is the guy, and I think he's going to wait until the X money comes off. And the other thing to remember is now you can sign whoever you want to sign. It does not count against your comp picks.
I think I would look at Greg Van Roten at right guard. Like, that's a guy you got. He's 34 years old. Okay. I've told Dolphin fans to look at this. He played for the Raiders last year. Look at the Raiders-Dolphin game from last year. Look at his work against Christian Wilkins and Zach Sealer. He was absolutely fabulous in that game. Okay? He's 34 years old. Those guys don't get paid a lot of money. You could sign him, and that gives you much needed depth on the inside. And now you really have, you have really good redundancy at left guard and right guard. Okay, you essentially have six guys you can go to there at both, at both spots. Quandre Diggs, I think, would be, have the biggest impact at safety, because that's a guy that you could plug and play, and he's a starter immediately, which means he makes Jordan Poyer your dime linebacker, which is a good thing because that's where he's at his best. And you can play those three safety sets again that the Ravens played last year. And, of course, Odell Beckham. Those are the three big names. Do you have money for all three?
No.
Well, no, you probably don't as of right now, but you still have some restructures you can go to. And don't forget, the Tua Tagovailoa extension frees up $14 million more, which means, yes, you can afford all three if you want them.
And when they do that, then everybody's like, oh, well, Chris Greer's trying to win now. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you do. And again, I get the vision for these early draft picks. I mean, again, you're drafting Robinson with the idea that, number one, you need pass rushers, and they're going to send them in waves. And I am perfectly fine with having all five guys on the roster with Shaq Barrett and the two incumbents. And just like, all right, when they need a breather, we can throw in these other dudes who are these, you know, vicious athletes that can get in there and tear them up. Like, I'm hoping to see Chop and Kamara just take out Josh Allen. Just, I'm ready for it. But, you know, I think that's where they, I like the vision. And so it depends on where they go with this and whether the money can meet what they want with Odell Beckham. But I think the wide receiver room is going to be completely overhauled. I mean, I like Eric Ezukama because he's really the only guy in there with size. Everybody else are diminutive receivers. But I think it's very possible he might be the only guy that's still left standing come week one.
And when you say left standing, what do you mean?
I'm talking about wide receiver three on back. You know, we're not counting the other two. No, we're not counting Hill and Waddle. Those guys are there. I say you bring in Odell Beckham. I think both Washingtons make the roster, and Ezukama makes the roster, and Berrios, Craycraft, and the rest of them are just out.
I don't think they're going to cut Berrios. I still think they view him as the main returner.
Oh, but you've got Washington that has return skills. You can put with the way it's going to be now, you can pretty much put anybody you want back there. I mean, you've got Achan, Holland, Waddle, Hill, if you need him in a big game. He's one of those rookies. I mean, he's going to have to come in and make a big impact. I don't think his roster spot is a lock at this point. One question I want to ask Al before we get out of here was, I was looking at, you know, I saw an article today about 53-man roster projections, and I started writing up my own. And I got to 54 players of the ones that I think will make the roster. Do you think
are we at 55 now?
No, 53 is still a...
It's still 53? I could have sworn somewhere down the line they were trying to go to 55.
No, they expanded the practice squad is what.
Oh, okay, practice squad. Okay.
So, and Miami gets 91 players because of the guy they signed. It's the international
pathway. The basketball player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was the Derval.
Bayron Matos.
Yeah. Who was that? Derval something from a couple years ago.
I remember him. Derval Quiroz Neto. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were able to keep an extra spot on the practice squad. But, I think I've got 54 players, and I had 10 offensive linemen making it. Do you have 10 offensive linemen making it? And if not, who is the final guy out?
Okay, 10 offensive linemen. Let's count
on. I had Armstead. My starters were Armstead, Wynn, Brewer. I put in Lamb, but say Eichenberg, and then Jackson. And you got Lamb, Keon Smith, Paul Jones, and Driscoll.
I did not
add any potential free agents. So that would throw a monkey wrench into that. But those are the 10 that I had. And I struggled trying to whittle that down because I think I like Driscoll as a versatile backup. and possibly could win the starting spot at right guard if they don't add anybody. So do you think they carry 10 offensive linemen?
No, oh, wait a minute. Hey, you said Jones, Matthew Jones or Robert Jones?
I had Robert Jones. Robert Jones. I didn't have, but either way. So do you see them, especially with Wynn and Armstead being guys that don't finish seasons?
That sounds about right, because, you know, out of all that entire group, I do believe that Patrick Paul will dress. Now, I know I said earlier that he's going to be, you know, it's going to be a redshirt year. Yeah, but it'll be a redshirt year in uniform, because I think they're going to try to get him some reps late in games that, you know, when Tua engineers these blowouts like he did last year. Think about it. Think about all the snaps that were up for grabs last year. I think it was 5 games where he didn't play most of the fourth quarter. There could be about 100 snaps where he could get some experience. So I think he'll dress all season, and he'll be, you know, he'll come in and in some of those blowouts to do some mop up duty. I think that's the right number. I think 10 is the right number. I think they do another season with Chasen Hines on the practice squad. I think Ryan Hayes stays on the practice squad. And I think that Matthew Jones probably has the best shot at the practice squad. And I think the guy that does get cut, I think, is Lester Cotton. Like, he gets cut.
Yeah.
Do you think they would consider moving Keon Smith to guard?
No. Tell you why. He has limited film at guard, but the limited film that he has at guard, it's not good. And he might as well be playing punter. Like, it's like, it's obvious that he doesn't like it, is not comfortable with it, and just doesn't understand what he's doing with it. While at tackle, you could tell this is a guy that's played tackle before and he's comfortable doing this.
And he's got like 35-inch arms too, so he's got some good length for the tackle spot.
Yeah.
Well, for what it's worth,
and he can move. Like, that's one thing that's for sure. Keon Smith can move.
Cutting Lester Cotton saves Miami $1.1 million, so I'd just go ahead and erase him from the roster altogether at this point.
You know, I'm not a fan, but they like him. He played the third most snaps of any offensive lineman last year.
There was nobody else, Duke. I put an asterisk on that. It's not like there were a whole slew of options.
They could have found somebody. just that's my take.
Not somebody. I mean, they would have to get him up to speed on the whole way that the blocking scheme works. That's going to take some time. At that point, you might as well stick with Lester Cotton at that point. This year, though, they're going to keep him around because they probably owe it to him, just because thank you for your service. But at this point, yeah, I don't like, if we are to believe, and I hate to make it sound like, oh, we know better than the coaches. Like, if they are the geniuses at offensive line that we say that they are, they have to know that Lester Cotton doesn't fit the scheme, right? Like, they have to know there's something wrong here. It doesn't match.
Yeah. I believe he's still practice squad eligible. So maybe they could satisfy themselves that way.
I mean, if they want to throw him a bone and do it that way, fine. But there are still so many.
But they do have really, really good flexibility, though. I will say that on the offensive line, because think about all the redundancy that they have. Armstead and AJ are the two starting tackles, right? Mm-hmm. But Kendall Lamb can play left tackle and right tackle, right? And then you have Jack Driscoll that can play right tackle. He doesn't play left tackle. And you still have Patrick Paul that plays left tackle. So
Isaiah Wynn can play left tackle, technically.
Isaiah Wynn can play left tackle. And Liam Meichenberg, like, if all hell breaks loose, Liam Meichenberg has played tackle before. So he could play left tackle as well. So they have a lot of built-in redundancy and depth there on the offensive line.
Yeah, I don't think that a lot of fans are like, we need to get, like, 3 offensive linemen. Now, look, Pittsburgh did that. They went 3 offensive linemen in their first 4 rounds. They had 5 picks and they got 3 offensive linemen. They took Peyton Wilson and they took Roman Wilson. So, but they had to rebuild their offensive line. I think Miami's like, why couldn't the Dolphins do that? And I was like, I don't know if the Dolphins needed to do that. They needed one guy, I think. And do they have him on the roster? I don't know. But I think they still need one guy, like you mentioned, Greg Van Roten. Bring him in, he'll start. You're good. Deal with it next year.
I think they're satisfied. I don't agree with it. I hear echoes of Chris Greer saying that you're more worried about it than we are, but I think they're satisfied with Isaiah Wynn and Jack Driscoll or whoever ends up being the right guard, which is a scary prospect to me.
We shall see.
All right. We're going to go ahead and end it here. Everybody, thank you all so much for listening. Once again, make sure you're going to prizepicks.com. Use that promo code 5, that's FIVE, and then we'll match up to $100 on your deposit when you sign up. And, of course, go to jerseys305. You can go ahead and get some classic jerseys. If you want to get the Miami Heat Shaquille O'Neal jersey, you can go ahead and get that from jerseys305. Use the promo code 5 when you make your order, and you'll get 10% off that order. I'll admit, when I was a kid, I liked basketball. I played basketball. I wanted to play football, but that's a different discussion between my mother and I. But I was so excited when Shaq joined the Miami Heat. I really wanted to, there was a part of me that was like, oh my God, I want to get his jersey, because Shaquille O'Neal was like, he was somebody that he was a superstar. How did the Miami Heat get him? Young me did not realize that Shaq was getting closer to the tail end of his career, and that's how he ended up there to begin with. But I was just excited that it was Shaq, man. So you can go ahead and get his jersey if you were like me in those days. We will be back next week, Tuesdays, 7:30 p.m. as regularly scheduled. Nothing's going to stop us from getting there. So we will see you on the next episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. Thank you, Duke. Thank you, Alf. And everybody, have a good night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.